Hey, what's good? We are April 11th, 2022. Welcome, everybody. As the world of modernity winds down, as we wind it down, Greta Thunberg told us it's time to get off the airplane. Time to get out your car. No more dancing. It's time to establish anarcho-syndicalist communes and live like medieval peasants. That's an old Monty Python reference. So we have a lot for you today. I've spent the last 8 hours combing through a lot of noise. Let me know if you can hear me. Let me know that I'm coming through. Yes. Yes, I am. So we have a problem. In the information war, there's a lot of projection, and then there's a lot of taking the winning strategy of the other side and pretending that's your strategy. Maybe you've seen this happen a few times. Well, broadly, they talk about Russian morale is crumbling. Russians can't take it anymore. The last I checked, this war is in Ukraine. I mean, maybe I'm retarded, but the last I checked, the war is in Ukraine. I don't see what there is for Russians to get tired of. I can see Ukrainians losing morale. Their military is certainly degraded. This had been a military welfare program in act in Ukraine for a decade, but really over the past couple years, Biden's diplomacy has pushed a lot of European weapons into Ukraine, even going back before the Russian incursion. And they keep doing these own goals. They keep trying to coast out this geostrategic, geoeconomic defeat. Like, that's their plan all along. Like, I meant to do that. You know, it reminds me of like in Return of the Pink Panther, when he goes to the to Lugash to see the crime scene, and they have like this metal thing that shuts down, like the, you know, that close the room off, like when you trigger the alarm, and Clouseau walks through, and it like startles him that it slams down behind him, so then he just takes another like step as if he meant to do that, as if his fast scared step was just one of two steps of an assured position. It was ridiculous. This is what this very Clouseauian these antics from you can't even say Biden, right? Because he doesn't know where he is. Now, there's a guy who speaks in Biden's ear, and the compromat on that guy is up to his ears. So now, I always wonder, so there's a guy who speaks into Biden's earpiece, but then there's a guy who speaks into Obama's earpiece. That's the real interesting thing about this. And that connects very much to the stuff we saw today from Maria Butina. Patrick Burns, they call ex-girlfriend, but Patrick Burns actually like a monk. He's like a celibate. He let that out of the bag a few times. Like when she was his girlfriend, they never once had sex, and they stayed in different bedrooms. Patrick Byrne is harnessing all of this magical power from the ether by never having sex. And I won't give away a lot of the research that I've done about this, because I'm in a funny position. This is the funny position that I'm in. I'm not real interested in building up large audiences, and it's never been a focus to tailor what I'm doing in a commercial, heavily branded and commercial way. It's just not in my DNA. But people who do commercialize and brand content are probably a third or half of my subscribers are content makers. So they, you know, let me be their researcher. Isn't that cool? The unpaid researcher. So I just put whatever behind my interesting stuff, I put behind a paywall, and they pay for it too. And then they go off and pretend it came up with it. And that's fine with me. I'm used to it. I'm from Los Angeles. I went to a school with a lot of young people that came from families of cultures of appropriation, let's say. They had almost religious commitments to be appropriators. And so I just, you know, I'm used to it. I'm used to kids, you know, taking the credit. And that's fine, as long as I can eat. So that's why people say, why do you put it behind a paywall? Other people don't. Yeah, because they don't put my content behind a paywall. That's why they don't. They say all the stuff that I say, and they say it for you for free because I did the research. So, I already put together the... this conflict works on multiple levels. This is not simply what you see on the map. Of course, people understand that there are geoeconomic and diplomatic intrigues involved, and that's obvious to a thinking person. But beyond that, there's even more going on. That is fascinating. It's alarming if you're on the wrong side of it, but it's fascinating. So now I will answer a few questions quickly before we get into the rundown. I want to get back a little bit to Patrick Byrne and Maria Butina, but I don't want to, I'm not going to give away too much secret sauce, but I'll just say this. Look, astronaut Edgar Mitchell had an experience in near Earth orbit. Okay. There is a multi-billionaire, former, I think, Exxon Mobil executive who is the main financier of the organization that puts on the prayer breakfast. Anyway, Patrick Byrne had worked, was getting intel from the Russians through Maria Butina, who infiltrated the Prayer Breakfast organization. And the cool thing is that in the news write-ups, they just talk about that she infiltrated Prayer Breakfast. It's like, so what, she fucking showed up there and had breakfast? That's not interesting. Of course, that's not the point. The point is that the person who finances that also finances Edgar Mitchell's organization that studies things which Americans have come in the sort of conspiracy theory realm, but in fact are real intelligence programs that I can speak about, relate what people call Project Looking Glass. It's like what people call Project Looking Glass. So there's a, it involves things, it basically boils down to just two things. Okay. It boils down to prophecy and necromancy. And things below the level of prophecy, but which originate from the same source of prophecy, and things below the level of necromancy, but which come from the same source of necromancy. We have always said that what's going on here is esoteric meta-geopolitics. The world is not, the material illusion of the world is precisely that, an illusion. Everything is an emanation of consciousness. Consciousness is what is holding this whole thing together, this statistically, mathematically impossible reality. And when I say impossible, this is a probabilistic determination, which, of course, hypothetically, anything is possible in physics. But there is a realm of highly improbable after which that marker in the layman's we call impossible. For example, hypothetically, a cow can walk through a wall if all of the atoms line up a certain way because of the tremendous space between atoms in matter and the tremendous emptiness within an atom. Like the relationship between the nucleus, if you will, of the atom and the protons and neutrons around it are like the equivalent of like Jupiter's distance from the sun. So it's much more empty space. Everything that appears as matter to you is on the ultra granular level, nothingness. Just tiny little bits of charge held together by consciousness. Which is why consciousness and human consciousness in looking at world events is so very important. Now, on a superficial level, the Russians half surrounding Kiev served many practical purposes. We've elaborated those. Our view is not much different from maybe what else you've heard or seen out there. We've been saying this since February 27th or between that and March 1st, thereabouts, March 2nd, we've been saying this is not the focus, but it has pressure at the negotiating table and it pins down these forces, blah, blah, blah. This is on a certain level, even the Ukrainians understood that part. But the world that's paying attention to this has now visualized Russian forces surrounding Kiev. And people have seen that and they've had a thought process like, oh, that's desirable. I mean, countries whose governments represent over half the world's population and many people in most anti-globalist opposition movements in every country basically are cautiously, if not worried, but, and of course, lamenting any loss of human life and violence, see what's happening in Ukraine as a good thing. A good thing out of far from perfect and very undesirable circumstances, but the best possible outcome of what the alternatives were. And that collective consciousness, visualizing and focusing on that event, created a mark upon time and reality itself. Which acts as a sort of foreshadowing or predictive programming. Two can play. It's the image in the mind that matters. And for generations, Hollywood has used theatrics and illusion to create images in our minds of any number of possible dystopian scenarios. And you can see them charging forward to it. We've talked about Children of Men. We've talked about Handmaid's Tale. We've talked about, there's many different things to understand. Klaus Schwab and Harari represent the alien race of single-minded visitors from the dark Gnostic Platonic film, was it Dark City? Yes, from Dark City. They represent a single-minded consciousness that had prevailed for a number of centuries on a certain type of society that we've described, people working to live and people living to work in this never-ending process that relied upon planned obsolescence, globalized supply chains, in the post-colonial, neo-colonial realm, the extraction of human labor value and raw materials from the developing world, a credit system of imaginary money in the first world. That doesn't mean that people lived extraordinarily well, not most of them, and not for the past 30 or 40 years. In fact, there's been a myth of progress and a myth of prosperity that media has promoted. And there are people who have worked hard and also gotten very lucky, and I hope they count their blessings and realize how much luck is involved. It's not much genius involved. Work, yes, but more luck. It's almost impossible to justify that this system could go on forever. And we've talked about the reset and its inevitability. And this gets back to our consistent theme that the changes in the world are inevitable because change, the only constant is change. Reality is fluid. Trying to hold on to the past is a form of attachment that can always lead to disastrous consequences. But most people don't want to go to the past. They just see this nightmare dystopia being presented by the Schwabians And from that perspective, the past looks better, doesn't it? But we also know that the past was not sustainable, but not for the reasons that they say. Not at all for the reasons that they say. Not because of the population. Not because of the temperature of the earth. All they had to do was make products last 10 times longer. And with the exception of maybe building materials and food, that could have sustained a human population double, triple, quadruple, quintuple the present size on the earth. All of the metrics that they show, very much like that imperial model that was used to project the COVID deaths, they're using very flawed assumptions in projecting the effects of human population growth on ecological concerns, the environment, or cost, or the illusion of scarce energy, all these things. But they are losing power, and they try to make all these things that are evidence of them losing power look like they're not losing power. It's not so much to convince, although it is, but it's not just or not so much to convince we the les miserables, the deplorables, the plebeians, the proletarians, the peons, the peasants, paisanos. It's not the slaves, the Slavs. It's not that. They have their whole structure and relationships and all the people immediately beneath them and the people immediately beneath them and the people immediately beneath them that's at the very top layers of this pyramid all need to believe and buy in or they're bailing. You see, these people are like self-interested people. These are not people of heart. These are not loyal people. This is a system of convenience and buy-in. And as soon as it looks like things are really going to shit, a lot of the layers jump off. And then it becomes like just like a bank run. In fact, literally a run on the bank. But it's a different type of bank. It's a bank of the trust in their vision of the future. So they try to make the things that are all the signs of their defeat look like they planned this all along. They know it's not sustainable. They know that they don't have a workable plan. Just look at this in microcosmic form. Look at Germany's energy policy. We don't want nuclear, but we don't want coal. We don't want gas, oil, and we don't want natural gas. We don't want liquid natural gas. And solar and wind don't work well enough. Well, that's true. That's been a scam. It's like the Princess and the Pea. Or like Little Red Riding Hood and the Three Bears. Yeah, this porridge is too hot. This one is too old. This one is too cold. This one... blah, blah, blah. This has been a long time set up to destroy Europe. If they realize at a certain point from about 2005, they run their projections and they fund their projects. They have to keep the promise of the dream going, really to fool the Eurocrats, the transatlanticists on the European side. It was a long con. They could see that you game these things out. They could see that Russia is going to be able to develop certain technologies, both in the technical, scientific realm, military, but also social technologies. They're going to be able to parallel these things because they're very, they're not cost prohibitive. They just require organization, which already exists. A lot of these things that in virtual, in information warfare are very low cost investments. There's almost no physical infrastructure that's really required on a certain level. I mean, in the scheme of things, it's not like military. Russia still has its nukes. They understood the doctrine about existential threat, but they kept putting out this promise and this idea, and they built up the Atlantic Council and all this media, the Columbia University, the CIA, all these things, Pentagon doctrine, as if they're going to take Russia apart. And they got the Europeans hyped up about it. But these same transatlantic forces also were behind the Green Movement and the anti-nuclear movement. See, they didn't just dominate the Operation Gladio, you know, resurrect the Nazis and do terrorism, or Gladio B and get the Nazis going. It's not just the NATO patsies of the far right. It's also the NATO patsies of the eco movement, the eco fascists of the left. Greta Thunberg and these, you know, as a symbol of that sort of thing. But this goes back before. There was an anti-nuclear movement that had legitimate concerns, but really was a disarmament anti-war movement. And somehow this got morphed into the ecological aspects of nuclear energy at nuclear power plants. Very strange. Anti-nuclear war movement of the 70s in Europe, which kind of had spun out of, well, even the Situationist International, Guy Debord, May of 68, this student movement, which became increasingly detached from, although it was of the left, or maybe some would say because it was of the left, increasingly detached from the working class, as it became the new left and began to focus on middle class lifestyle choices, whether they were sexual or what you consume, vegetarianism, taking a canvas bag to go shopping. Those are good things to do. Don't get me wrong. But they set up Europe to not be able to have a sovereign energy source. Russia could see this coming. They set up Europe to be reliant on Russian energy so that when the same people who had disallowed, when the same transatlantic forces that had disallowed, had actually encouraged dependence on Russian energy, had disallowed the development of nuclear energy, which was the only real viable alternative energy, mind you. And then I'm not saying that this is a perfect thing or that people don't get increased cancer rates when they live within 20 kilometers of a plant. These are all probably very true things. So you just don't build people's houses close to them. Or you look at, you know, fourth generation, next generation things. You look at thorium and cleaner nuclear that doesn't produce waste. This is a reality. These have been invented. But the anti-nuclear movement, it worked very similarly to the anti-immigrant movement in the United States. You see, you have the, on the one side, the closed the border people, and then you have on the other side the you know, no borders at all. And what those two forces in this controlled paradigm fight, the point is to have something in between where you do have migrants coming across, but they don't quite fully have a legal status so that they can not just flood the labor market and reduce the wages by the presence of their existence on the normal labor market, but actually don't have the legal mechanisms to register serious complaints if they're paid far below the minimum wage. So then you have the left keep saying, open the border, and then, you know, oh, well, now they're humanitarians, now they're refugees, and they're coming through these George Soros organizations through Honduras that were already, when they showed up, they were already registered. And my mother's a politician, and she saw what was happening in her state, and she's very sympathetic to refugees and to migrants, but she saw something she had never seen before, which is that the people pretending or claiming that they were the parents of these children looked nothing like them, were obviously from a different socioeconomic class, like from within Mexico, like women with Prada bags and bleached blonde hair and blue contact lenses with like these little, you know, indigenous, you know, real, you know, purely Oaxacan, Central American looking Mexicans. Not at all like, you know, the women who were claiming to be the parents. And she's like, this is something very wrong. And she saw they were showing up with their paperwork done. That's impossible. It's like a service. Costs a few hundred dollars at least. And it's really not available until you arrive. And they were showing up with it all done. It turns out there was an NGO that Soros was financing through the United Kingdom, and they're working with pirates, human traffickers, that they rebrand rescue operations. Same thing happens in the Mediterranean. You have these mercenary groups, pirates that pretend to be, that they get funding from Soros to do human trafficking, and they call it rescue. Soros is financing the coyotes. But it's a controlled paradigm fight because they get and this is the point. You really can't solve that in parliamentary politics because you either have a firm, no one gets in who's not invited, or everyone who gets in is a citizen. But by having that kind of gray zone, which is the planned outcome of the immigration fight. That's the planned outcome of the immigration fight. Okay. That's exactly what they did in Europe with energy. It can't just be that because Russia provides European energy, that the other normal things that go along with that. I mean, there should have been some comparable back and forth. I mean, European firms should be able to freely sell to Russia. Russia has a pronatal policy, pronatal, not pronato, pronatal, like they have children. That's a growing demographic. That's a growing market. Europe wants to sell to Russia. And with the money, some of the money that they make can buy the energy from Russia that powers the industry that produces the products that sell to Russia, creates an ecosystem which leads towards Eurasian integration. And that's what the transatlanticists do not want, but they want something more than that. Russia's a very tough nut to crack, but they have different teams. And of course, Team B was set up to set up the stuff, Navalny and all these unserious characters. I mean, there was no real threat to Russia's sovereign intelligence organization. Once they saw that Putin came in, and then once they analyzed and they realized that they had been scammed, because, you know, Putin got the green light from people like Abramovich, right, who we've just heard from, not Marina the witch, but the Russian Abramovich, the Russian oligarch who was kicked out, who then pretended that he was poisoned when he showed up at the negotiation that he wasn't invited to by the Russian side. Very fucking strange. You know, the former owner or whatever of football club Chelsea in the UK. Very, very strange. Very, very strange. Putin got the green light, the nod and stuff from all these people like that. So they were hoodwinked. The American cabal thought they had cracked the Russian nut. They're like, now we got Yeltsin in there. Remember Yeltsin and Clinton on the stage together, Yeltsin drunk and Clinton doing that fake laugh where he pretends to have a big hearty laugh because he was such a fucking actor. I don't know if you guys, I'm dating myself. I know I remember it. This was like 96 or something. So here we are, and they had planned to take Europe down, and they're still doing it. And it's Russia that knows that when Europe gets put into this disastrous situation that historically what they end up doing is attacking Russia. When the transatlanticists, the British Empire in America, and the occupation of Europe, the NATO heart is, you know, it's the city of London, it's Langley. Some of the esoteric secrets out of the Vatican. But for a long time, the Western occult studies have had a lot of that technology from on the occult stuff. Talk about necromancy and stuff. The Catholic Church was openly doing necromancy up until the 17th century. Openly. People used to know about this stuff. It was one of the big complaints that the Lutherans and other Protestants had. People don't talk about it. They talk about the political and economic side of it, or they get into the kind of the granularity of the of doctrine. But really, it was like these priests were doing sorcery. It was bizarre. There's a whole history to that, and it was directly out of the church. It's a very, very strange history indeed. There was the alchemist and mathematician John Dee, and he was into divination, sorcery, hermetic philosophy. He had one of the largest libraries in Europe, and people he was working with, he was an advisor to Queen Elizabeth I, as we said. And this was all like approved through the church. He was actually a primary advisor to most of the Tudor monarchs of England, and also to Rudolf II in Europe. Now, Elizabeth I was probably a cross-dresser, but that's another story. But this, the requirement, the alchemical relationship between convincing transgenderism, I know this is not for everyone to understand, but this goes back, is the point. That's why you always see that there's a certain strong fixation between sorcery, especially alchemy, which always relates to not the relationship with the supernatural per se, but using what we call today supernatural things to make transformations of matter into other matter, alchemy, like turning lead into gold or something like this. So this goes far back. Okay, this goes far back. This is, goes deep into the Western religious tradition. The Protestant Reformation makes a lot of sense from that point of view. Like, what is this craziness? Now, why do we say this? Because as we, our theme today is that, that this conflict in Ukraine is happening on multiple levels. And those of you who know me or have heard about where I'm coming from, I was a socialist in my youth, my dad was like a social democrat of the left, like a Bernie Sanders socialist. I was more of a communist. My mom was a Chicano nationalist and Maoist, like a kind of like a separatist for the Southwest, and a Maoist of a type, but not a dogmatic, not a doctrinaire Maoist. Just that was the milieu of the time of the Chicano movement. Very ML, very Marxist-Leninist influenced in the early 70s. People now call it the ML phase of the movement. Now everyone's in real estate and investment. They grew out of it. But she was also steeped into antiquity and the Renaissance. And I basically grew up at the J. Paul Getty Museum, the old one, that's a Roman villa. I basically was there like 3 days a week with my mom. We would drive up the PCH on the one highway, you know, from the 405 to the 10 to the 405. I grew up very close to Venice Beach, so it was just kind of up the highway through the Palisades in Malibu and then into the J. Paul Getty Museum, which was like a replica of Roman villa. Very had the great works of art. I mean, basically paralleled like the Uffizi Gallery in Florence. And this was my childhood, but also with all this like Marxist-Leninist stuff at the same time. It was a fertile territory for a lot of funny stuff to happen in my head. They also had a lot of books on Hinduism and Buddhism, but they were pretty hostile to Christianity as an oppressive institution. And keep in mind that my mom's family was fairly Catholic, but her Aunt Mary, after having 10 children, her doctor, seeing that the next child would kill her, tied her tubes while she was still in recovery without really consent, nor would it have mattered if it was. But then my Aunt Mary, or my great Aunt Mary, goes and tells the priest, you know, this is what happened, and he refused to ever give her services again, ever refused to ever allow her to take part in communion or anything like that, which turned off her sisters, my grandmother. Awful. And but then the, you know, the born again evangelical movement that was kind of growing was very much not an urban phenomenon, by the way. It was not happening to people who live in the city, and they were, you know, getting low information about what was going on. So like, and they were, happened to be a lot of Republican voters, and they happened to be behind Ronald Reagan. And that's neither here nor there. Actually, Ronald Reagan was a communist most of his adult life until later. People don't know that. He was a communist. He was a very dedicated Marxist, pro-Soviet Ronald Reagan. And he was the president of the Actors Union, and everyone in that union was also a communist sympathizer. Yep. But he greenlit the what we talked about before, the geopolitical project to counter the trilateralism of the Trilateral Commission. The Trilateral Commission project for Europe was to basically, for European left-wing parties to work with the European side of the transatlantic banking institutions to broker with the Soviets to transition control over left-wing guerrilla movements under the under control of the of European, or have increased the ties to the European capital of the transatlantic banking network, which of course is like another iteration of the City of London through the European, before the European Union, the European Union, but just, you know, the banks that would become the banks of the European Union on the European side of transatlantic banking networks, using the Vatican, using the Jesuits and liberation theology to kind of, actually integrate more deeply and more effectively than the communists could, because the peasants and stuff in Latin America were Catholic. So having the Jesuits come in with this kind of pseudo-Marxist ideology helped to kind of transfer power from the Soviet, but the Soviets still had the thing. The Europeans and the Soviets had a lot of collaboration as well. The world has been as much diplomacy and tacit collaboration and deals struck ad hoc or long-term planning between the so-called Cold War, between the so-called, you know, Iron Curtain. There was a different reality going on all the time. It was the European banks, Spanish banks, French and Spanish banks that really got behind Hugo Chavez and the Bolivarian so-called revolution at the end of the 90s. It was, you know, the Soviet Union had collapsed and was no longer a geopolitical force, and this was still the Yeltsin period, and Europe and the Jesuits really went in full power. And so a lot of that stuff you see in Latin America is like holography. And there's been attempts by the Democratic Party in the U.S. to a wing of the Democrat Party, not the Hillary Clinton wing, who people actually like John Bolton are a member of. Not the neocon wing of the Democrats, like the Clintons were actually neocons, but the old trilateralist wing of the Democrats, like Senator Blumenthal, Max Blumenthal's dad. That's a great example of a Democrat playing the game to seem like they're supporting these left-wing movements in Latin America that seem to be, that are, those people are pro-Russian, but really it's a long-term recapture the flag game. Vying for influence. I always wonder, like, Max Blumenthal showing up somewhere with his fucking smartphone in his pocket, and the deep state just has, just recording every conversation he has with everyone. I wonder how many people have died after talking to Max Blumenthal. No, I'm just kidding. Not really. But the world doesn't work how it appears, and we're constantly trying to dig deeper and understand it. There's both a metaphysical fight going on, and then the geopolitics and the intrigue are far beyond the surface of what's apparent, far beyond the surface of what's apparent. So there was a plan to destroy Europe using Russia. Not that Russia wants to destroy Europe, but actually to push Europe into being the aggressor. And then Russia, either through entanglements of alliances with World War I, or in World War II with the Nazi invasion of the Soviet Union, but the fact that because England and the U.S. had planned not to back Hitler after pretending for a decade that they loved Hitler, you see? England and the U.S. were anti-Soviet. I mean, sure, there was the 1927 trade deal between the Soviet Union and England, trading steel and steel technology for wheat. But the real apparent thing was the relationship between the British monarchy and the Nazis. It was Hitler's foreign policy depended heavily on its close relationship with England. That's why Mussolini's Italy was not very close to Hitler's Germany at all. It was a forced alliance that only really came to be the obvious one after there were some changes of power and some bad signs from the British that they were going to not be on the side of Nazi Germany in a great war. And that was a big surprise to the Nazi leadership. But for example, when Germany annexed Austria, they overthrew a fascist dictator of Austria who was pro-Mussolini. Mussolini had been a British agent, but his moves were against the British Empire once they were trying to create Italy as a sovereign power. And that was actually had a lot to do with Mussolini's invasion of Greece, because the Greek military dictatorship was being controlled by the British, and they were allowing the British Navy to control like the Aegean and control the Ionian Sea and the Adriatic as well. And it was a big problem to move for Greece to allow British imperialism there. And which is not to try to lend support or make apology for Mussolini, but just to understand how these alliances kept shifting and what was motivating them at the time. All very different things. The ideology doesn't matter at this level. There's metaphysical things going on and deep statecraft. Political ideologies are for normies. Political ideologies are for people to invest their thoughts and prayers and hopes in, to have visions in their mind that are somewhat related to like this lesser degree of co-creation of reality, which is a subset beneath the will of the Godhead, which in this realm is in many ways expressed through the combination of billions of different free-willed agents, free will being the gift of love. We're trying to understand what's been going on. The plan to destroy Europe by forcing Europe to have a dependence on Russian fuel, on Russian energy, not being allowed through the transatlantic control of the European Parliament and of the sovereign parliaments, just enough control. And of the left, of the right, of the environmentalists, of the militarists, of all the different people that you would think would be in a room would argue with each other, had enough of their movements controlled. I'm not a total control person. I don't think that that power is total control, but just the strategic people in these movements. A lot of the environmental and green movement was good, talking about waste and water runoff into, you know, clean water and these things. Very important. But then it's like, who became the head of that party and why did everything become about global warming? That's very weird. How did saying, hey, these pesticides being sprayed on our food are bad, become about global warming? Just by the key important people to change the party platform, to get make sure that that those people from your party are going to be the MPs or even the PM in the country. So Europe was forced away from any type of development of energy. There are ways to do energy in Europe that are not nuclear, but you could have a supplement of, there are energy sources in Europe, by the way, you know, what we call so-called fossil fuels, but they're probably not fossil fuels, but even if they are, they had it, they have it, they have some. They're not allowed to use it. Just like in the U.S., there's oil that could be tapped into. There's no reason for the $5, $7 a gallon gas in the U.S. That just, you know, the United States has nuclear power. It could build more nuclear power and it could subsidize fuel, but it could also remove a lot of these regulations towards not the exploration part of it, because they play games. Like if you listen to Jen Psaki, she's lying about what's going on. Yes, they can approve exploration. The issue is not exploration. It's other issues relating to not being allowed to actually get the oil out of the ground. There's many other games that are being played beneath the surface. Now, what if there was a movement in Europe? What if there was a, now I use the word deep state in the neutral sense. There's the cabal, and then there's just the deep state. The deep state can be all kinds of people. They share certain qualities and none of them good, don't get me wrong. But we have to break out of this simplistic Marxian class reductionism, which people like Harari and Schwab are obsessed with painting this neo-Marxist worldview that there's only two economic classes. There's only just the have and the have-nots. And the haves all agree with the World Economic Forum, and the have-nots are useless eaters that we need to figure out how we're going to entertain them or depopulate them or give them drugs, video games, metaverse, pornography, you know, and while we sterilize them or kill them with a mystery illness or nuclear war. Societies are complex, not simple. Every distinct job is actually a distinct relationship to the means of production. Class solidarity is difficult to achieve. It's difficult to achieve it among the ruling class. That's why they introduced these esoteric and occult societies, because they need to have a religious belief where they are all bought in through blood, where all their hands are dirty and they have the compromat on each other for crazy shit I won't mention. And also they all believe in it together as a cult because their actual economic interests are divergent. Their power comes from different aspects of the economy. And when one gets better, the other gets stronger. Like if someone's invested in oil, then it's bad for shale, right? Now, they can destroy Europe and then there seems to be some fascination or fixation with destroying Europe. That the Western elites have, they seem to think of the United States as being this fertile ground to keep things more stable than not compared to Europe. Just in the 20th century. I'm not saying that all these patterns always repeat or the same plan is used the same way. Sometimes they're just echoes. Sometimes they're inverted images through time. I don't claim to know, but we can take certain analytic tools and historical examples to try to work through the different possible contingencies that they have in mind. Now, nothing's better than hindsight. I'd rather explain how things came to be than to explain what things are to come. I think only God knows that. And I think that's what we're really talking about when we say that this comes down to a battle at the metaphysical level between prophecy and necromancy. So, I will answer questions very quickly. Keep writing them. Okay. Tomas Forgach says, do you think Taiwan is next? Next for what? I don't understand the question, but I think that China will only use a military, you know, blockade, a naval blockade of Taiwan if other countries far away from the, you know, the region tried to somehow intervene. I think a lot of the Taiwan narrative stuff is misunderstood. The people, the power structures and the population today of Taiwan, which the Portuguese called the Isle of Formosa, are Chinese. They're from China. They lost a civil war not long ago, in the 40s. And they fled to Taiwan and set up like a parallel government that first the UN recognized that one, and then the UN, like in the 70s or something, like switched over to recognizing mainland China as the government of China. China mainland China wasn't recognized for like 30 years that it existed. Imagine that, like this whole thing. Imagine you go to the UN and some guys from an island that lost power in China or at the UN actually represent China. That's kind of weird. That's kind of like how they're going to have Zelensky. They're going to have some little part of the U.S. embassy in Warsaw be like the Zelensky government that represent like Ukraine. They're going to replace China. They're going to replace Russia on the Security Council, and they're going to have the Ukrainian government in exile. Oh, they all speak Russian. It's the same thing. Ukraine, Russia. I don't think China's approach to Taiwan, I think they have a much more, easy angle. Like Taiwan's already economically integrated into China. It already happened. Like Taiwan's already part of China. It's already one China policy. It happened economically. We're just living in the ghost of the past, like the shadows being cast. And, you know, they don't need Taiwan to operate differently. Like they're happy with Taiwan how it is. They were happy with Hong Kong before 97. They have the two system with Hong Kong. Hong Kong is part of mainland China, but they like that it has its own rules and laws. Like Chinese capital from mainland China can work around any sanctions by just working through Taiwan. The more that Taiwan stays independent in your imagination, the more that China can get around things like any sanctions through banking. Just use Taiwan banking for mainland China. They're not enemies. That's a charade. That's a spectacle. That's a holographic reality that Taiwan and China right now have these problems. There are people that are wrapped up in that illusion. Oh, there's the whole, Taiwanese defense force. There's whole sectors of Taiwanese society that are wrapped up in that illusion. Oh, yeah, for sure. But at the deeper level, the real decisions, all that is a charade. Okay. Rossi asks, I understand that Serbs and Russians are historically Slavic brothers, but why do the Chinese have so much interest in Serbia and bring weapons to Belgrade with military planes? Are the Chinese and Serbs allies? Yes. Yes. The Chinese and the Serbs are allies. So it was actually the wife of Milosevic who was very strongly promoting she saw that the very important alliance for Serbia, or then Yugoslavia, to make was with China. There are some infrastructural stuff that the Chinese came in. Like there's a bridge. So like when you're exiting like this neighborhood of Belgrade, that's like north of Belgrade, but on the west of the Danube. Okay. It used to be that you had to drive all the way into the center of Belgrade to go north of to then cross the Danube there into other parts of Belgrade called like Pančevo and stuff like this. And the Chinese came and like knocked out a bridge that would have taken the Serbs. Well, based upon the bridge that they did build themselves, it would have cost 10 times as much if the Serbs had done it themselves and taken, five times as long. The Chinese came and knocked out this. It's like a 3 kilometer long bridge altogether, including the whole highway part of it. I mean, the river is not that long, but the whole, the ascent and the crescendo and decrescendo of the bridge and the kind of highway connecting it. The Chinese built the whole thing like in a day. It was crazy how they did that. The Chinese are already like in the future with that shit. It's crazy. The only way to eliminate China is through like a biological war. like if you were to create a biological weapon that targeted like the, you know, genes of like the Han ethnicity is the way to take out China, but then you would end up taking out like 80% of Koreans and like 60 or 70% of Japanese is the reality. So as soon as Japan like figures that out, and maybe Abe knew, and that's why Abe had to step down. But as soon as people figure out that reality about the biological element of biological war and the genetic sequencing, like, you know, you're going to see like instantly, you're going to see like North and South Korea unify. You're going to see a China-Japan alliance. It's going to be insane. Stefan asked, do you see Chinese peacekeepers in Republika Srpska soon? No, I don't. No, I don't see that happening. But I see Chinese weapons coming in. In fact, we got the Chinese weapons system came in, landed into Belgrade yesterday. This is like a Chinese version of the S-300 and another couple of planes, big, like those big jumbo transport planes, arrived today with weapons, arms. Yeah, big things are happening. I said, we're right here. And the next thing, like if this Ukraine thing is not contained, it's not going to be, I mean, yes, of course, we can see what's happening in the Baltic. And it's very close. It's on Russia's border geographically, the Baltic. But in the Balkans, deep south, like next to Greece and Italy, right? The Balkans, Romania, right? Vampire country, the Balkans, not in the north, not by the Baltic Sea, you know, up there, but down here on the other, complete other side of Europe on the north-south axis in the Balkans. That's where things are going to pop off. And I've explained it already because of Bosnia-Herzegovina and everything there. Kosovo, Croatia, former Yugoslavia, basically. But there's no reason to have Chinese peacekeepers. You might have Russian peacekeepers in Serbia, and then have Serbian peacekeepers in Republika Srpska. But the next moves are to definitely to increase the military potential of the autonomous security forces of the Autonomous Republic of Srpska, which is inside of Bosnia. So not the Republic of Serbia with its capital in Belgrade, but the other Serbia with 2 or 3 million people with its capital of Banja Luka. It's contiguous and adjacent to Serbia, but it's inside of Bosnia-Herzegovina. This is the outcome of the Dayton Accord, the Dayton Agreement, 1995. Yeah. Mephisto 93 asks, do you think Russia is timing capture of French nationals at Mariupol to affect the French election? Yeah, someone else mentioned that, in a very astute person in the comments, and I hadn't even thought of that. And as soon as I read it, I said, yes, that's a very strong possibility if that's in fact what's playing out. They would use it in such a way. It's hard. Now, the thing is that reality doesn't normally work out the way in the stark visions of things, but a version of that is what happened. So it might still be Macron, but his cabinet has people, or the military gets rearranged and is firmly to a non-committal position on Ukraine. See, Russia doesn't need to like put in a Eurosceptic nationalist candidate into power in France. Now, I happen to know that Russian media, as a media intelligence project, was entirely fueling the Yellow Vest movement, and the cabal burnt down the Notre Dame. The cabal burnt down the fucking Notre Dame Cathedral to show France what would happen as a satanic ritual to show France what happens. And there had been a series of an absurdly high, statistically impossible series of church burnings throughout France in that year, for those who know. Now, the cabal did this and they want to blame, you know, Muslims. Now, maybe the individuals involved in some of that, the lesser ones, with the Notre Dame, it was actually the firefighters were actually not firefighters. They were like secret police officers dressed up as firefighters that made the fire and like made sure a little fire turned into a big fire. Like instead of having water come out of hoses, they were like fucking blowtorches. They were like gasoline coming out of the, it was insane. And, but the lesser ones were probably their, you know, their Muslim Brotherhood or Al-Qaeda operatives that they monitor and groom and train in these programs that are called de-radicalization programs are actually the same program as the, to make the radicals. Like that guy who keeps showing up on Joe Rogan, who everyone thinks is like this, like, oh, he works to de-radicalize. No, 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 no. He's an MI5 agent that's involved in the radicalization and then the control containment of them. So then you can de-radicalize them for a while. So they're not, you know, chopping the heads off of old ladies at the supermarket every day. But then when you need to reactivate them, you reactivate them. They are the silent dreamers who can be awakened. That guy is totally evil. That guy on Joe Rogan, totally evil. Well, yeah, he says things that are true. That's a limited hangout. Like he says things that everybody already knows. That's what you have to understand. When people talk about things that everybody already knows and they get catapulted into all the platforms on whatever YouTube or whatever that magically continue to exist, despite everyone knowing that anything real on YouTube gets eliminated. That's how you know, limited hangouts. You can't actually talk about, you know, Aleister Crowley and John Dee and Dugin, and you can't talk about human sacrifice and the truth about geopolitics. You can't talk about metaphysical things. You can't talk about esoteric geopolitics. You can't show, like, you can believe in God and you can have YouTube channels where like Muslims argue with Christians all day long. You can't show how the forces of that God and that evil are real forces in the world and that they interact in our daily life, in your daily moments. Like every time that you have a negative thought is a demonic attack. Every time you have like a negative thought, like a self-doubt thought, when you can't stop thinking about an embarrassing moment in your past or a painful event in an inescapable way, just keeps repeating over. Those are demonic attacks. They appear as your own thoughts, just like when a schizophrenic is under demonic possession, they keep, you know, getting, oh, go kill that guy, go kill that guy. And they can't get out of their head. All those negative thoughts, you can't get out of your head. This is a very real active force in our everyday lives. And you can't connect that to war, intelligence operations. You can't connect that to, you know, all of these governments. I mean, the powerful ones have people who can see into the future. And those only come from two directions. There's prophecy, which is accurate, and only prophecy shall come to pass. And then there is necromancy and everything beneath that. So not everything has to involve actually killing somebody, but ultimately it does, but there's tiers of sorcery below that. And that information is more like intelligence collected horizontally between listening in on the conversations of others. And then these demonic entities can listen in on the conversations of others and then inform you about that. But you have to be assuming that you're in control of these demons and they're not in control of you. They're always tricking you and trying to, you know, they may take joy in seeing you get frustrated, and they're not your friends. They know that God wins in the end, and they will kill their own minions. They get a devilish pleasure out of frustrating all souls, all God created souls. It inspires, they would lead the people who believe them down a path of self-destruction, while those people going down that path of destruction are trying to destroy as many other people and as many other lives and create as much violence and fear and pain and agony along the way. But it's a course of self-destruction. You don't die and then go into like the penthouse of hell that's not as hot. You see what I'm saying? That's an analogy, but just to understand. There's no alliance with the dark forces. That's an illusion. That's an ego trip. You can't control them. It's a exercise in ego. It's a defect many New Agers have. In fact, they think that they're balancing these powers, or that they can summon control them. They did all these books and rituals and stuff about controlling them. They only, allow you to think that you're controlling them. But when you die, just like Anton LaVey, and just like Aleister Crowley, who said almost the exact same thing as they were dying. Oh, fuck, I fucked up. Oh, what is this? It's suddenly getting so dark. What is that? Who's that person? This is very bad. This is very bad. They don't work for you. Now, a lot of these Azov guys are hardcore Satanists. This Nazi occultism is this belief that you can kill your own people and then use that as product to show that your opponent has done it. They are firm believers in killing their own people. Sacrifice. It's this ritualized sacrifice. They think they get power from the human sacrifice. They think they're like eating their souls and the souls transfer to them and then they get stronger. Okay. Sandra asks, Daz asks, who's in charge in Shanghai? I don't know who's in charge in Shanghai. I know that, Xi Jinping is trying to completely reorient the Chinese economy. And there's some different steps along the way. And one of them is to split and divert the export economy oriented oligarchs of China, and to get some of them on board with a different type of export economy, which does not rely upon on supply lines by sea, but along physical terrain like trains and highways, the Belt and Road Initiative. But that's only going to be able to compensate for some of the stuff that's lost from sea trade. The sanctions will hit China eventually. Okay, just completely at some point. Okay, in the near future. They'll be able to use Hong Kong, but really more like Taiwan for a while to get an end run around sanctions. But ultimately, they're going to expand this is their plan. They have it in the works for like more than a decade and a half. They've already built cities that are empty, whole cities that can house millions and millions of people, like whole cities with intersections and buildings and schools. There's like tens and tens of millions of homes in dozens and dozens of cities that will each be 10 to 20 million people big. In China are already prefabricated. There are hundreds of millions of Chinese that are living in pre-industrial conditions. And as China reorients their economy to be more domestic, they're going to expand the middle class. there's not really a positive end game with population reduction, not for the middle term. Like, even if you're talking about production, yes, you can get some production and things like that, but people get things done. And you don't need to worry about an uncontrollable population if you have a system which does not provoke resistance. They're not worried about a lot. People like the social engineers and the social thinkers in countries like India and China and Russia and a lot of countries, they're not in this Green New Deal, Great Reset cult of media that we live in the transatlantic sphere. They don't think that the population is too big. They don't think that the world's going to collapse tomorrow if one more cow farts. They're not of that belief. They're building long-term structures. Now, some of them may be coercive and all these things. I'm not championing anything. I'm just describing the world to you. They're not trying to eliminate the population. They're planning on a booming middle class in China. Now, will it be a police state? I don't know. That's up for the Chinese to figure out. I don't attempt to interfere where I don't have skin in game. It's none of my business. I don't know enough. You'd have to be from there with a lot of family there to have, number one, have an idea, and then to number two, have a kind of moral prerogative to feel very strongly one way or the other about what should happen over there. It's a very imperial mindset to think that we should stick our nose everywhere and be like, this should be the outcome. Like, Chinese people are plenty smart. I'm sure they have resistance movements and they have, they have their own logos, their own dynamic to figure out, I'm sure. No societies are perfect. I just try to be as clear about what's really happening as I can. Any legitimate news, info, or confirmation? Ray is asking about the supposedly successful special operations by Russians in regards to the freeing of thousands of kidnapped children being kept underground, some in cages in Ukraine. Rumors were floated there was a secret talk between Trump and Putin in regards to that. Well, Trump and Putin had plenty of secret talks. Trump said openly that he trusts Russian intelligence more than the cabal intelligence. He was spanked for that. He said it at Helsinki in June a couple years ago, and it's been redacted from the internet. And he said a lesser version of that during the formal meeting where they're both standing up at podiums, and they try to pretend that that's where he said it when he said just something else. But there was a sit down that they had at the, you know, in Helsinki, and there was a table between them, and they spoke. It was the warm up to the formal press conference that was conducted later, and they've edited that completely off the internet. They've totally scrubbed that, like in the Orwellian sense. You can't find it almost anywhere. If someone will find it, that would be great. I'm sure it's somewhere. I mean, it's somewhere on the internet, but not on the first, 50 pages of Google results. It's somewhere on the internet. But he said, well, actually, I trust their intelligence more than ours. Now, he was forced to retract that, but he didn't really. Then he said, I trust my intelligence more than theirs. Well, it had been said for a long time that Trump was building up an alternative intelligence structure, a private intelligence army. Talked about this in the December seminar. Many interesting things General Flynn was involved in. There's been a Bluenon attempt, and through people like con artists like Gordon Rose and other people, who unfortunately, or as part of a larger plan, we saw Lynn Wood, you know, re-sharing on his Telegram. But this was not convincing that Lynn Wood really believes this, but rather other things were at play because of the leaked call that Lynn Wood leaked of his conversation with Flynn actually exposed a lot of the things that, for whatever reason, wasn't the focus of anyone's conversation subsequently. But if you listen to the whole leaked call, you actually tells you almost everything you need to know. Just no one really pays attention. I don't know if it's too much sugar, too much fluoride, but it's all right there. It's in plain sight. Now, in Ukraine is the number one human trafficking center of the world until the war started. Now it become very difficult. And a person deeply involved in the Clinton network of trafficking children out of Ukraine was killed by a Chechen sniper in Kiev. Like in the first week of March or the very end of February, dude, it popped off right away. And it was like very strange. It happened in the streets of Kiev, popped off by a sniper, a Chechen sniper in Kiev. That's real weird. I don't know how they knew it was a Chechen or how they knew it was even Russian, but at the very least, he was killed. And he was involved in a charity. And the logo of the charity was a hand with a hand inside of the hand. So if you know your FBI symbols of people who are not trying to help children, then you know exactly. In part, I mean, that's a symbol. They, for whatever reason that we can get into at another time, they have to have their symbols out in the front because they are the weakest force. You see, God works in mysterious ways. Evil does not work in mysterious ways, people. Evil is pretty plain to see. It's not smart. It's not, you know, it's not all these things. If you are not a victim of emotional or physical abuse in your childhood, or if you have healed, and if you have good emotional intelligence and your intuition works and you listen to your intuition, like you don't try to block it out because you're confused about, because you don't have trust in your threat assessments because you haven't worked through your early childhood traumas or you never properly individuated. Okay, but if you have actually good intuition and you know your intuition, you can tell like vibes on people right away. You know, like when people are lying, you know, when people are truthful, you know, when people have good intentions, you know, when they're just flattering you, you know, when they're just telling you what you want to hear to sell you something. And you know, when people are pedophiles and you know, when these operations are what they are. Evil is not even an independent force in the world. It's just the byproduct of free will, which all comes from God. It's your choice to choose love. It's your choice to choose humility. It's your choice to choose freedom. Vaughn asks, will the world ever find out what's in pit 404 at Azovstal? Yeah, I believe so. Gain, never mind, never DM you first. Oh, God. Oh, that means that you are involved in selling, huh? You use a lot of Telegram to sell things. You don't want your account to get... I never DM first. Look, admin, it's even in my name. When you appeal to Telegram, when they cut you off for 5 days at a time. No, look, even my name is I never DM you first. He asks, there are French soldiers who have come to investigate the deaths of Bucha and others. Could they be the target of the Kremlin? No, I don't think so. I think they just come and make whatever story. Yeah. Dogface Pony Soldier asks, what's your take on Gurdjieff, his idea of Egypt being the birthplace of esoteric Christianity is intriguing. Does necromancy go back to that missing historical link? Well, Gurdjieff was in this, you know, in the Islamic world and stuff. So the thing is, I mean, he was from the Caucasus, right? He spoke Turkish and what else? Azeri. He spoke Dagestani and Armenian. He spoke like a dozen languages, right? English, Russian. He had interactions with Madame Blavatsky as well, didn't he? Now, I'm sure that there are very strong evidences of esoteric Christianity in Egypt, but just bear in mind that when the Western Church went through a lot of its book burnings and stuff like that, it could only do the Inquisition and Reformation in the areas that it controlled. But the Christian world was much bigger than that. So all those places that they didn't burn books, then people think, oh, Jesus was from there, or oh, these other, you know, Gnostic or esoteric ideas were from there, because the Inquisition only had power in, the Inquisition was a product of, was a symptom, product, and intercausal force of the collapse of Europe, which was a larger Romaic Christian world before. All of these systems of turning against your own people and inward, or becoming more strict or more dogmatic or more didactic or more linear, are societies in collapse. Like when the Ottoman Empire was collapsing, that's when they attached further and further to the identity of Turkish people as the core. That's why, as Ukraine has failed to be a system-forming state, a state that can form a system, it has degraded in its failure to exist as a socioeconomic big system. It has collapsed into an attempt to become a people-forming state. Governments that try to appear very strong and top down are doing so because there is a weakness that they're trying to solve. So a lot of things that appear to be esoteric and therefore appear to be foreign to Europe are only because the Inquisition was successful in Europe, because that was the extent of the power of the Inquisition. Well, in, you know, Mexico and stuff like that too, but there were not older texts of the Christian world that the Inquisition in the New World had to deal with as much. I'm sure that individuals brought stuff with them that they had to hide, but the real library burnings and book burnings happened in Europe. So that gives the illusion that the home place of very important biblical figures was not in Europe, when we don't know. Maybe they were, maybe they weren't. The problem is that people typically in a place tend to appropriate and localize important historical figures as their own. And they tend to reflect that these bigger than life figures came from where they come from. They nationalize them in a sense. And in so doing, we may lose track of where people really came from, or where ideas really came from. If, for example, if the Nazis had succeeded in Europe, And if every book by Karl Marx in every European language was burnt, and every historical reference to Karl Marx was purged, then centuries from now, historians would think that Karl Marx came from China and Russia, because that's where would be all of the references and stuff that exist in literature would be from those places. Does that make sense? So I don't agree with Gurdjieff per se. He might be right, but his evidence can't be conclusive because of the dynamic that I've just explained. Sebastian Pasnik asks, you did not talk COVID for a while. A lot of people in Canada and US are affected by mandates on their job terminated and fighting it through unions, grievance, arbitration, and legal avenues. In your opinions on where this is going to end up? Well, there needs to be a rank and file uprising in labor, because the mainstream unions of the AFL and of the SEIU, Change to Win Coalition, are totally against the workers. And they're totally only trying to bargain from the point of view of the Democrat Party, which there are just attachments of. The labor bureaucracy is completely under the control of the deep state, of the cabal, and of the deep state too. So that has been a growing defect in organized labor for several generations. The vertical integration of the labor bureaucracy, who's the real labor aristocracy, not well-paid workers. That was a fundamentally flawed assessment by people like Gus Hall, and then reinforced by the Maoists. It's a false assessment. American worker was not a labor aristocracy. But the labor bureaucracy was an aristocracy, which was integrated into the vertical power structures of the military-industrial complex, of the corporate sector. And they recruit them on board with the foreign policy. And there's the organized labor in the U.S. is either with the Obama faction or the DNC faction. So fighting in the U.S. through unions is hard, because the unions have gone over the best interests of the rank and file and have concluded tentative agreements and side letters, which are like bridge agreements, ad hoc bridge agreements in between larger contract negotiations, to allow for required vaccination. So I think that the American worker has to overthrow the labor bureaucracy and just has to create parallel institutions and stop looking at these structures like they're God. They're not. Decertifying a union is fairly simple, and you can also just create another union or create a different type of organization that then using that different, like a 501c3, as a fund, and then through maybe one or two proxies, use that to fund a campaign to decertify your corrupt union. You know, as I've talked about, and thank you for the question, Sebastian, the failure of the trucker convoy was not its logistics, but the inability to understand how to make these succeed. Truckers' unions have failed truckers. That's easy. But the people who organized the truckers' convoy had no long-term plan. It was almost like anarchism, like anarchists. So they did the walkout. They did the blockade. And then how do you build power from there? How do you escalate from there? So, without learning the lessons from the old organized labor from 100 years ago, if people think of unions as like an insurance company for your job or something, then if it's not actually fueled and mobilized by workers' power, then it's never going to go anywhere. And that's not bad news. I believe that people will have to break out of that, and that they could, and that they will. RG asks, hello, Flores, Mr. Flores. From the metaphysical angle you have touched on, do you believe we are placed here from the future to change the course of present events in order to play a different outcome for the future? Sort of, except that was only going to be the only outcome. And it's not from the future. It's from the kingdom of heaven, which has already been established outside of time and in your heart. And this is just, we are living through the movie of how the kingdom of heaven, which exists beyond time and outside of time, came to be. This is the story of how the kingdom of heaven came to be created from this world, transforming this world, bridging or becoming the eternal heavens, creating it. So now you have free will. And that's the most important thing to focus on. Because you are choosing whether to accept or reject the principle of love. And through accepting it requires humility. If you simply practice humility, and if you attempt sympathy and empathy, if you can attempt an imperfect way of giving love in the way that God gives love, then the reality of Christ will come into your life. Go through the motions until it becomes real, and then through that new reality, you will have some epiphany or theophany. M. Petrovich asks, were COVID restrictions and measures introduced to shape public for war in Ukraine and consequences it brings? Virus did not disappear with the start of the special mission, yet the same yet official narrative is different. In many, many ways, the whole COVID thing was the beginning of a global war. But it was not, you know, the metaphysical intel that the cabal gets is always jaded and shaded by the source of the information, which appeals to their ego, which is goading them along a course of self-destruction. So they believe that certain things are possible, which are not possible. And then when those things are not possible, then the ego kicks in and they have to be like, well, we meant to do that. We meant to do it like this. This was our plan all along. So it's hard to say to what extent they really thought. I mean, the problem is when you look at, even though people are kind of misunderstanding John Mersheimer, we've talked about consistently on this channel that he was not a good guy. John Mersheimer is not a good guy. he only stated obvious things from my field, from international relations. I mean, he's a titan in this field. We had to study him in university. But he's not a good guy. He actually was part of the delusion promoted in the Atlanticist theories that Russia would not go into Ukraine because they would get bogged down in some Afghanistan situation, and that's just not true. No thinking person who understands the terrain of this conflict or the balance of forces or the technology used or the extent of Russian intelligence, the use of drones and satellites. No, nobody thinks that this is going to be a prolonged insurgency with a guerrilla war, but that's what they're already talking about. Because John Mersheimer promoted this view that would be the outcome. See, now he was told the things that he said worked both ways, okay, to be clear. John Mersheimer said that Russia would never invade Ukraine because it knows that it couldn't win because it would be another Afghanistan and they would end up having to withdraw without any realizable success. And now people took that to mean that John Mersheimer was saying, so therefore NATO doesn't need to fund the budget and they can back off of the Russia thing and, you know, stop acting as if Russian aggression is a real thing because Russians can't actually aggress. But that just gave the cabal the thinking that they could go forward and do these things, and Russia would be smart enough to know that they couldn't succeed in an occupation or regime change from an occupation in Ukraine of some kind. Does that make sense? So COVID restrictions were introduced for complex reasons relating to the reality of their losing situation in the transatlantic power base. They're losing this. And they tried to time things and do things, but there's an inter-elite conflict too. And the way that the COVID thing, there was an American president and there were different structures in the military and the elites that number one, know that Russia would win in Ukraine and said that from the beginning. And number two, knows that the confrontation with Ukraine is a nonsense confrontation. And number three, also hurried along the forced release of a gene therapy, which had already been researched and experimented upon people in Africa and maybe even India for a while for an illness that they already had the gene therapy for. But if they had released that when they were supposed to release it in 2025 or 2024, then it was supposed to be a Shanghai style lockdown. And all of the investment in this drone technology and all these drones, like Turkey making drones and these country making drones, the idea wasn't so much that they're being used in a war against Russia and Ukraine, which was not supposed to happen. These drones were supposed to carry people food. They're supposed to be a service like Uber, like Uber Eats, for people on lockdown. That's a fact. Though there is a company, you can look at the publicly traded companies, and there was like stock value being built up in this shit. Drones for food delivery. You might have even seen commercials or images about this, if you remember. There was like a younger black guy with like the yellow Uber Eats thing, and he's like steering a and there's like a kid in the 10th floor. He's like happy to get the package by the drone. They have an anti-racist moment together from 10 floors apart. Many things were planned for the Great Reset. And now, of course, they have always ongoing, you know, adaptive planning, real-time adaptive strategies and stuff, okay? But they are being informed that these things are not just desirable, but possible by demonic forces. A satanic cult controls the power elite of the main faction in the transatlantic sphere. Putin said this out loud at Valdai, like 5 years ago at Valdai. And Putin is not a bombastic, he's not like Ahmadinejad or like the Iranians, like, oh, the great Shaitan. Like, he's not at all like that. The dude is totally blunt he's non-excitable. He's a non-excitable man. He's also not a person who speaks in analogies or parables. So when Putin said that the transatlantic sphere is controlled by Satanists, this wasn't like an emotional outburst or a agitational propaganda thing because he's like the imam of some theocracy and everyone sees the world through the lens of, you know, Muhammad versus Shaitan. No, no. He was just saying the quiet part out loud in his normal, he said it in the very nonchalant tone. This is Valdai, like, I don't know, 2015, 16, whatever. It's still somewhere. You can find it. I don't think it's been deleted. Satan always loses. This story's already been told. We're just going through the motions. The only thing that really matters, the test is about you. The outside world is like the outside world, man. The test is about you. You know, don't feel powerless in the world. Of course, continue to be an activated digital soldier, but don't feel powerless in the world. You conquer the devil within. That's what you do. And you decide the terrain on which you fight. And you decide. You when you take the power of God inside of you, when you meet God eye to eye, where God wants you to meet him, which is as a child, with the wonderment and naivety and humility and generosity of a child. That's the wavelength that God exists on. God has knowledge of good and evil through the human experience in this realm. But God is only good. God knows everything that you know, but through you. I haven't read The Remnant in answer to that question. Chris Gorilla asks, how can we counter the mainstream media lies and how far do we go about waking someone up? it's not a linear, there's not like a scale of 1 to 10 about how far you go. You just have to develop good, be a good listener. Listen to people. People listen to people and don't try to win arguments. Winning arguments is not ever, has an argument has never once changed someone's mind. Never argue with people. And set very small boundaries about how much you interact with anonymous random people on the internet. Devote the minimal amount of time to that. Build relationships with people that you know in real life. And build cause with people who are interested in what you have to say. And with people that you see that you have a vested interest in, like your coworkers or people who live next door to you or people in like your extended family, be a very good listener. Open up to them. Opening up to them is not words coming out of your mouth. It's you being open to their words going into your ear. And then when they are done expressing themselves, then you just ask them, so what you're saying is, and not in a sarcastic way, but in the most generous interpretation that's the most complete without any attempt to create an I gotcha or a find a contradiction. No. Just to, so what you're saying is da 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 in a very earnest way so that their answer is, yes, that's it. And you say, okay, I understand. And let them ask you, why, what do you think? And then say, well, I'm not sure that you would be open to it, but everything that you're saying makes sense to me. And I felt that way before, but what I found is this something. Did you hear about that? And just make it a genuine conversation that's not about your ego and not about being right. And don't have an end game in mind about where that conversation, don't try to lead the conversation. Let them lead the conversation. Give them all the power in the conversation. And it doesn't have to, the conversation doesn't need to end there with they've changed their mind, or just create the space that they can talk to you and keep the line open. But we're not countering the mainstream media. We've talked about how information war and hubs and distributive hubs work in prior episodes. And just to recall or to recount, if you didn't catch that, is this. Very few people actually believe in mainstream media, okay? Most people watch it to understand what is considered the polite truth of the time. But as we explained through peer-to-peer social media, truth takes on a different dimension itself. Truth takes on a more real dimension when people believe that the information is coming from real people. When it comes from peer-to-peer networks, things are more true than when it comes from media. People look at media, when something becomes true that we all knew all along and it finally gets admitted in the media, we understand it feels like a vindication. Because now it has shifted the tone of what's politely accepted. But social change doesn't exist at the level of what's politely believed or what everyone pretends to believe at work or at the water cooler or small banter at the grocery store. But it's actually what people really think that motivates them. So the mainstream media lies, the media's already been defeated. You've already won. I approach it from that position of strength. And that gives you the position of generosity to be open to people so that they open up to you. Create that space that they can really share what they really think. That they can explore different possibilities with you, through you. Um Pakistan, I appreciate the question, Nikita. It is happening today, but it's not the most interesting thing to me right now. It never has been. It's important, but it's more about how the ISI is going to be used in structures in Afghanistan. And it has to do with the detente that Pakistan was kind of approaching with India, and they had been aligning, because I appeared numerous times on Indus TV in Pakistan. I have been a Pakistani news guy, actually, a couple years ago, for a couple years. I was an Iranian and Lebanese news guy also. I would come on as an expert and talk about things. And I was on Indus News, which is called Indus, but it's in Pakistan, right? Okay, not India. I understand the Pakistani media intelligence sphere pretty well and what the pivot they were trying to do, and it was possible under Khan. And they were trying to orient a neutrality towards Iran to coordinate also with Russia the situation in Afghanistan. That's actually, now we can see where we're going to see the biggest impact of any coup, any parliamentary coup in Pakistan is going to be in its orientation towards creating divisions in the newly created emirate of Afghanistan. Yelena, I can't, I appreciate the question, but I can't open up a Twitter feed and conduct a show and then read what someone thinks and then answer it. I don't respond. I don't, number one, as a rule, I have very little interest in what is out there. And it doesn't inform me that much. If Pepe Escobar is a decent writer and if he includes facts and things and his takes are very predictable, and I'm not against him at all, he's often right. I don't, you know, he writes in ways to make points about things, and he's more of a colorful writer, like talking about the Ukrainianization of Europe is complete. I don't know what that means. And I'm not, you know what I mean? I don't mean to be cranky, but it's just, I can't read something and then come back on the middle of a show and talk about the thing that I've just read because you wanted me to read it. You know, I'm just not familiar. I don't keep up. I don't have time to read columnists, unfortunately. I'm working about 16 hours a day for you. I'm collating. I'm going through all the events from Ukrainian and Russian sources. Immediately from there, directly from there. And then I'm trying to make odds and ends out of what these signs really mean in information war, which are practices of mass psychology. My expertise being in counterinsurgency, insurgency, color revolutions, etc., within the rubric of great power rivalry. Mr. Brown asked, aside from taking responsibility for my own inner peace and light, how much are evil ET involved in the Ukrainian conflict? Are we getting any benevolent ET help? So when I was 15 years old, I led a group of 18-year-olds to Groom Lake in Nevada, Area 51. I was arrested. That was the thing in the 90s. You know, this has been like 1993 or something. There was no real internet back then. you had like magazines, underground magazines. The creation of the creation of the whole UFO phenomenon as being beings that come from other planets that resemble Earth, but that they're like somewhere in space, is like this whole construct of modernity that, you know, it's a whole construct that we talked about before, comes into being around the same time that photography becomes a mass phenomenon. You see, for 100 years before that, people were called crazy. But for the 100 years before that 100 years, people were called, oh, you saw an angel or you saw a demon. So it went through this process, this clinicization of people are insane. And that's where all these sanatoriums come from. And that's why for you know, all this time before, you didn't have, you know, this clinical diagnosis of, you know, what any type of dementia. And then all of a sudden you do in the 19th century, and then photography comes out and people can actually take pictures of these things like Vermana, or these things that, you know, Renaissance artists have been painting as an aspect of things that appear in the sky in relation to spiritual events. So I'm not of the view that, you know, I take Occam's razor. I'm very rationalistic and scientific about this. And I said, I think just in the last episode, Jacques Vallée was one of the preeminent ufologists whose work as an astronomer and as being able to, you know, in looking into the night sky and actually having seen these crafts and coming forward as a whistleblower, so to speak, said, yes, there are UFOs. And he became sort of like the darling of the UFO community. And this was very big, like in the 70s and 80s and stuff. Then he did some very deep contemplation through his case review of all these different encounters that people had with UFOs, what people call grays, and the fact, you know, how they materialize and dematerialize, how they would appear in windows, but then just suddenly be in your room, how people were consumed with fear and they would be frozen, very much identical to the old hag, how they would be under a trance or they would be taken without their will into some other place in time. Or dimension. He began to explore that these were inward projections of inner dynamics of a unknown, you know, metaphysical psychological manifestation. Not that these people are crazy, mind you, but that there were things about the human existence which transcended space and time at the, you know, level of consciousness, and that these beings were appearing as the result of internal machinations of consciousness driven processes, not physical beings in a metal craft that come from another fucking planet. You see the difference? You understand what I'm saying? So, you know, then the UFO community lost their collective shit over that, and they didn't like that he had said that basically what people call grays are identical to medieval descriptions of like elves and gnomes and things like this. Pranksters and tricksters and things. Different types of demonic entities, effectively, is what we're talking about. So now the mainstream view out of, you know, things that were developed later out of Project Blue Book, et cetera, are that these UFOs travel through great distances of space, time-space continuum, that they're not traveling through time, and they're not traveling through space, and they're not traveling at the speed of light, but rather they are dematerializing and rematerializing through consciousness. That's the mainstream view. So we only have to reduce from that whole process that they dematerialize from some other location that's like Earth, only not Earth, and then rematerialize here. We don't have any direct empirical evidence of other planets like Earth. We don't actually have direct photographic empirical evidence of other planets outside the solar system. We may as well just treat this solar system as the main event. We may as well just treat this planet as the main event. Much of perhaps this thinking about deep space may be a collective delusion that reflects the paradigm and the value systems and the limited but then relevant scientific pseudo-conclusions of a given people, of a given time, within a given paradigm, within a given century, within a given culture. It's not, these aren't great truths about existence outside, but rather reflective of sociological and anthropological manifestations of a people in a given time space, within a given cultural narrative. Projecting just because we discovered, you know, how to do solid state plastics and make microchips and get planes to go off the ground, and then extrapolate from there that it's possible to have planes that go up into this imaginary realm of a sky speckled by millions of infinite white dots that we call stars. You see. Now, having said that, Mr. Brown, your question is fantastic. Yes, the Nazis in Ukraine are directly have a cult. Their different ranks are different from their ranks on their sleeves. They have an internal cult identity. They don't carry around in badges. They know who they are. They do seances and rituals, and they engage in human sacrifice. And they conjure from the sacrifice this Crowleyite technology that became huge in England during the Victorian period. We've talked about at length. While people were focused on, you know, Albert Einstein's debunking while actually confirming the existence of ether, while people were focusing on the theory and then general theory of relativity, while people were, while the public discourse was focused on the infinite potential of nuclear power, the actual people like Jack Parsons of JPL, NASA, were doing experiments into consciousness and human sacrifice. That's what JPL, Jet Propulsion Laboratories in Pasadena, California, who was there with L. Ron Hubbard, when L. Ron Hubbard killed Jack Parsons in his lab and took Jack Parsons' wife, and he killed Jack Parsons in a satanic ritual. Jack Parsons aborted his own wife's fetus and put that inside of a mini nuke that they had decided they were going to create, like an Apollo Lucifer. I'm telling you, man, this is all exactly what happened. What the world has been told about what things are is like an inverted funhouse mirror representation of actual reality. So yes, evil ET entities are involved in the Ukraine conflict. They're called demons. And benevolent ET entities are also involved. They're called angels. You see how that works? They've always been involved in every human endeavor. They've always been involved in every in everything big and small in life. John is saying, won't China use Vietnam as tertiary backup to beat sanctions and reinflate the Chinese economy and currency? Yes, they can. It's not preferred, but Vietnamese production is good, but it's not, you know, economically, they would like to integrate with all of the South Asian countries. In fact, Vietnam has had a long history of conflict with China, and there's a lot of conflict with China in Vietnam. There's a Sino-Vietnamese minority. There's actually different types, different waves for different reasons. But there's like an indigenous Chinese Han ethnicity in Vietnam that has been historically problematized by the mainstream Vietnam ethnicity And it's they have issues and stuff. China invaded Vietnam after the U.S. was kicked out. There's a lot of things bad. China was kind of helping, working with the U.S. and backing the Khmer Rouge, Cambodia. A lot of weird stuff. There was a proxy war between China and the Soviet Union, you know, in South Asia, on top of and in between the U.S. French war in Vietnam. It's totally crazy. No, that was a long time ago in the scheme of things. It was more than 45 years ago when that ended. But Vietnam has developed a lot. They're pretty close economically with the U.S., but it's possible, like it's there to do. But in terms of the sanctions and the banking issues, China will have Taiwan for that. You see, and because they'll have to block Taiwan just makes Taiwan China, which China wins. But China doesn't want Taiwan like that. China wants Taiwan to be how it appears to people in the West. And China wins that way too. China's holding like all of the cards with Taiwan, as you can see, and sanctions. They're planning for sanctions. They've been planning for sanctions for a while. Like the beginning of the end was entering the World Trade Organization. And people plan. China thinks in terms of centuries at this point. They already went through a very bad period under the rule of a Manchurian dynasty. They went through centuries of weakness, ruled by a Manchurian line of emperors and empresses. They came under they sold irreplaceable things for replaceable things. See, it's not the monetary value of what you're trading that matters. It's, are you trading an irreplaceable thing, which is like created in the earth, for something that's manufactured? Right. So China was like, all this Chinese jade is like in the UK. You see the problem? You can't manufacture jade, but it's super valuable. You see the problem? And they were getting fucking crap, like trinkets, like manufactured goods from England in return. They had a similar problem with the Dutch. China did. But they've learned from all of that. They're not thinking, they don't think like the West. Their leadership has a strategic culture. Confucius, oh, that's cute, asks, do you agree that Russia should try to extract more concessions by capturing these NATO commanders in Azovstal? Yeah, I think that try to. Yes, I think so. Would make sense. We might not even hear about it. They might, you know, confidentiality and the you know, anonymity of these people might be part of the deal. We know that they're there, and you know, I know that curiosity, like the perp walk or like the unmasking, like in a Scooby-Doo, is like, we're looking forward to that, but it might not happen. I hope it does for my own satisfaction, but I'd rather that between them using those people, those captured NATO commanders strategically, versus my desire to see a perp walk, I'll go with them being used strategically. Yvonne G asks, do you believe in time travel? No, I don't believe in time travel. I believe that prophecy can reveal events that occur in time, and that people can be shown events which by definition have occurred at one time to be or has been or another, but not that people, that's not how time works. Time doesn't work that way. The entire future and the present are in this moment. There's no other location to go than the here and now. This realm of existence, created, as the Greeks would say, perhaps through the destruction of the, you know, destruction of the Titans, Kronos, is the explosion, meaning time, and we're in that explosion. We're in this process of creating the kingdom of heaven, which simultaneously already exists above and in your heart. You see how that works? Kendall asks, what degree did you study in the university? Geopolitics, security studies, international relations. RVM asks, if you can speak on it, what is your impression about the Saker not allowing conversation about the COVID plan and outright hostility to those who question the COVID and vax narrative? Well, I'll tell you. I don't know what is like, if he's worried about, you know, whatever his, obviously it's his platform and, he has built it and he has a strategy and he has the right to moderate the comments however he sees fit, because his main responsibility is to people that are there for the main event of the main thing that they talk about on the Saker, which is Russia, right? Isn't that right? And he's made decisions about what he thinks is going to happen, maybe to, I don't know, his social, his funding, like through social apps, or being deplatformed, or you see what I'm saying? And so he has that right to make a strategic decision. There's things that I don't allow to be talked about. I besides that, I think that they're misframed and they do more spiritual damage than they inform other people. Yeah. You know what I'm talking about? Don't write it, because that'll get you banned. So I understand that. It's not, he's not the one who probably really wants to censor people, but he has to be the transmission belt of all of these cancel culture and rules that affect all the work that everyone does. So in defense of Andre. Now, that said, I think he's a fucking asshole. And he's been outright hostile with me for the better part of a long time. And people don't know really who he is. They don't know about, he was on the bad guy side of things in the past. So I'll say that now, since he's a fucking asshole to me. He was on the bad guy side of things for real, like with Serbia, Yugoslavia stuff. Okay. Maybe that was just his job. Maybe he's expressed remorse about it or whatever, but that's fine. I mean, people change and they should change. I know I've changed, you know, people should change, but I think that he does, histrionics, and I think that he's a fucking drama queen, and, and I was being asked his identity. And I was respecting his identity, and I protected his identity by saying that he was someone else that people liked, not who he really is, who a lot of people don't like. And he got mad at me for that. He's the one who goes by this, you know, egomaniacal name, the Saker, Andre. So I don't know, you know, but he has his business model to protect. I mean, that's fine. But I think he's actually, I think he's a man of his place and station and everything. And I think he genuinely believes in the COVID and vax narrative. I think he probably does believe in the mainstream view. He's not a, in my opinion, he's not a, you know, creative or out of the box thinker in any way. But maybe my view is shaded by the fact that he's always been a dickhead to me. I don't know if it was because I was, you know, in my early 30s and he thought that I hadn't earned my place at the table or, you know, didn't know what I was talking about or didn't like that my newspaper was in competition with his in his mind, even though I thought it was a very different model and had a very different way of interacting with it. It's like saying that, you know, Instagram and Telegram are in competition. Like they're very different models. They're very different. People have both, you know what I mean? People go to both sides. People read Fort Russ and they'll go read the Saker and, you know, get very different experiences, a very different interaction. Mine was not personality driven. It wasn't my name. It was just Fort Russ News. I just took it down, by the way, a few months ago, as right as the conflict started, for safety reasons, because I have stuff on there exposing a lot of stuff about Azov and the stuff that we've been talking about here that doesn't need to be out there. We exposed it at the time, and they're being handled in the battlefield. I don't need to expose the satanic rituals and the war crimes of Azov and Idar and, you know, Nationalist Battalions, Pravi Sektor, or, you know, Yadosh and his boyfriend and their homosexual, you know, antics. I don't have to, you know, it doesn't matter anymore. It's everything's being handled on the battlefield. And I don't need the being tied to those things in the present that are explored in the past as the next hit piece about me is going to be written. You see what I mean? And, but I'm glad that people go there. I think people go there and they can become informed, you know, reading the Saker. And, you know, content is king and no one cares about, you know, people's individual beef. You know, I get that. I spend zero time on my platform talking about, you know, Saker's a fucking dickhead, but just because he is doesn't mean that information isn't good, you know? But, you know, I've tried to reach out to him a normal few times after he got mad for no reason, really, and just tried to clarify. He's like, da-da-da-da-da, and absolutely never attempt to reach out to me again. Like, okay, you know, I'm going to outlive you anyway, dude. I mean, you know, I'll be the one explaining you to the world after you're gone. That's for sure. But I won't waste my time with it in reality. Adam Smith says, do you think China is in lockdown, not as an authoritarian show of force for fun, but as a military defensive strategy to mitigate mass gatherings and biological attacks? Look, yeah, keep infrastructure clear, blah, blah, blah. Anything is possible, Adam Smith. I don't have like an innate like gut, you know, Sinophobia. Like I'm not afraid of Chinese power, you know, and I'm not, I don't think that China is good. I don't know why people think China is good. China doing China. They are spiritually neutral. They're not people of faith. And they're not people conducting satanic rituals and invoking Moloch and shit like that to get, you know, false ideas about the future. They're just, you know, doing China. I think that we've talked about this before. It's a very realistic threat, the racial weapons. And that if it hit the Chinese, it would affect the Koreans and the Japanese as well, to a lesser extent. But then again, not all of China are Han. But the main weapon that would be used, I think, in China would be one that focused on the Han ethnicity. And I think it's a real threat. So maybe these are drills for them to prepare and to work out, because you have to actually do these things to see how they'll work out. But also, power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely in many cases. I don't think it has to, but I can see how that, if the threat is real for them, how it could be manipulated and used as a vehicle of social control. Why not? Why not be both? So, you know, I remain open-minded about China in regards to that. Mr. Brown asks, is Charlie Ward a fake? Yes, Charlie Ward is a fake. He's a absolute charlatan and phony. Joe Z11 asks, how do you earn a living? I'm a geopolitical analyst and I analyze the world, and I do private consultations. I've worked for as a consultant for governments, foreign ministries, political parties in parliament and in power, on social control theories, mass mobilization tactics, counter color revolutionary stuff like that. Oh, thank you, RG. I'll reach out. I'm going to write you right now. Today, Yusuf is, I'm skipping down. Okay, I'm going to come back up and then that'll be it. Today, Ukraine announced that they blew up a Russian ammunition depot in Lugansk Oblast. Is it true? Maybe. Maybe they did. I don't know. I've been talking to you guys for a few hours, so. I haven't followed the American Vagabond. I like the idea of the project. I like the branding of it. I think it's an important avenue. It's an important demographic. I think what you see with it, like how it strikes you, is what it is. So that's kind of cool. Yeah, I'd like to talk to him. Why not? Abba Aya asks, I'm new here. I can't understand why China is next on sanctions or U.S. is versus China if in the first place aren't both economies. Yeah, they're both tied together, but the U.S. wants to unwind it. But China also wants to unwind it. So it's a mutual desire to unwind. It just doesn't, it's not stable. It leads to war. And it was working against, it was creating economic, it was creating a disproportionate amount of power in a wing of the Chinese oligarchy, which was focused on exports and not on, and that relied upon low wage labor, which is bad for stability. As Chinese are exposed to the global world through the internet, their aspirations rise, and the goal in China is to have a middle class lifestyle and not to live like you're in a fourth world country. So, but if the Chinese economy is very export oriented, then that has a downward pressure on wages, right? Which keeps people impoverished. But if China has a domestic autarkic economy where the primary market is viewed as the Chinese people themselves, then there's a incentive to pay higher wages so even though profit margins might be lower for the companies, it's sustainable so that Chinese people have higher wages and then they can buy the things that are made in China. Does that make sense? So that's why. And the U.S. has the same problem, although the inverse. The U.S. lost all their jobs and lost the middle class, lost good industrial jobs and good even service sector jobs, lost to India, like all the everything that involves a telephone. And the U.S. has a big problem with prison labor. They should outlaw prison labor and outlaw telemarketers or service economy people that you talk to on the phone being in prison or in India would be a great step. And things like that have to change in the US. So, yes, no questions are too out there, but if it's on a subject that I've already covered enough of, then I'm probably exhausted with it for the day. I want to thank everyone for their time. Very good questions. We had a very good, I think, roundup of what's going on. And, that would be the last question is LeKay asking, do you believe tribunals are taking place? I think that sufficient evidence for tribunals has already been floated as a form of blackmail, and that it's more that justice is not the most important thing at this level. It's more important to use compromising materials as pressure and to trap people into making decisions, such as foreign policy decisions, such as those going on in the U.S. So I'm of the opinion that U.S. foreign policy right now has been shaped inexorably and in a permanent way by the 45th administration, and that in a sense, it's like you have a power sharing government. If you Google the term power sharing government, you'll see that's what happens when there's kind of like a coup that the person kind of halfway steps down and they again turn to a power sharing agreement, and there's ways to set that up. So it's very complicated statecraft stuff. I've talked about it at length before. I'm going to be done with it today. And I just want to thank all of you for your time again. And yes, for today, that's a wrap. Thank you very much. Goodbye.